Hello, everyone, and welcome to Minute 9 of Season 8 of Movie Rob Minute, the Daily Podcast, where we FUBAR our way through the 1998 Steven Spielberg award-winning film Saving Private Ryan, 1 minute at a time. I'm Rob, and joining me once again today on this Halloween is Alan Sanders of The Alan Sanders Show. Welcome back, Alan.
How's it going?
It's doing great, doing great. Wait, so did you do your Halloween extravaganza last night, or is it tonight?
Oh, no, it's always on Halloween.
No, but, so you do it between the 31st and the 1st, or the 30th and the 31st?
No, 31st to the 1st. We literally, okay. Halloween night, trick-or-treating. We are live. We wait till the trick-or-treaters usually wrap up here before 8 o'clock because it's so dark. So we go live at 9 till midnight. We stop at the witching hour.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So you can plug that at the end of the show again to remind people how they can maybe try and listen to it if they're interested.
You've got internet capability. You can listen to a terrestrial radio station. We stream it. So yes.
There you go. All right. So minute 9 begins with the battle on the beach continuing and ends with Miller watching the carnage as he gets soaked by blood and water at the same time. So we ended things yesterday with Miller finally making it towards the beach. And we're just continuing exactly with that scene. I mean, we see weapons strewn all over the place. We see bodies that didn't make it inland. We see, supplies, everything. You know, when you're and again, when you watch this normally, not the crazy way that we're doing it, you don't notice most of these things because it does a very quick pan shot over all these things. But, you know, when you're pausing it and you're watching in slow motion and, paying attention to the details, you see how detailed this really is. I mean, this is just unbelievable.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And they continue with the shaky camera aspect of it to add the realism that we are right there, dodging all these bullets and artillery shells and everything else that's going on. I mean, there is just so much going on. It really is pure battle chaos. There's no other way to describe it.
No, I mean, what I love is they're using such a long focal length to try to keep everything in focus, unless it's super close to the camera, because you get just a blink of two people rushing just in front of the camera. But they're so close, they're gone in the blink of an eye. And you got a guy in a helmet and a guy who's lost his helmet and must have been nicked by a bullet because you got a bloody mark on the side of his temple. But it's so fast. If you don't freeze frame it at the exact moment, you miss it.
Yeah. No, it's amazing. It's amazing the way that they do it. It's do you think that one guy is like carrying the other guy, or they're just both moving in unison?
I think they're moving in unison. It feels like it, but then the camera's also moving. You get the sense that whoever's running the camera is kind of moving with the action a little bit.
Right.
And then he's kind of moving around. So very much handheld, as you said, and not just stationary. We're eye level with everybody, including crouching down, but we're moving a little bit as well.
Right. And I also love the realism that there are bodies that are lying on their backs. There are bodies that are lying on their sides. There are bodies that are lying face down. You know, it's not as if everybody has fallen in the exact same way.
Mm-hmm.
You know, these are men who were, shot and fell as they were, I guess you can say. You know, it makes me wonder, and I don't think we'll be able to catch it, but it makes me wonder if we can actually see Sean Ryan's body, through this, through the carnage here. I mean, I know that the end of the sequence, in another, was it 15 or 18 minutes from now, we'll be able to see where his body is placed.
Right.
But the question is whether if you're paying like really close attention, there's like an Easter egg, that you can actually see Sean Ryan's body just lying there the whole time. Who knows? And again, going back to what we were talking about yesterday, the sound here is impeccable. We hear mm-hmm. bullets clanging, throughout as they're ricocheting off of things, probably mostly the hedgehogs. There are explosions all around. And we see that these men that are surviving are slowly moving forward. You know, and some of them are stopping and getting a few shots off before they duck for cover, and then you know, take another few seconds and then do it again. It's just amazing watching as this minute just unfolds, because so much is happening.
There's a great little movie technique that they use here right about second 11 or 12, as the camera is kind of panning and catching all of this depth of action, you know, all these different waves of people. And what I love is you're not going to see the entirety of the beach. And because we're staying low with Steadicam, it feels immediate. But if they didn't have this technique of throwing a smoke, kind of a haze to block parts of the beach, you'd be like, wait a minute. It only looks like maybe 50 guys within the frame, but because of the smoke, and you see it kind of come pouring in, and it obscures so much of the beach behind this foreground action, your mind doesn't even think, well, where's everybody else? It doesn't. You don't have to, because we wouldn't have seen it anyway.
Right.
But if you watch, that smoke comes spilling in just as the camera gets in that position to help kind of keep the fact that you won't see past what Spielberg wants you to see, which is just maybe the first 30 or 40 guys on the beach, not the 300 or 400 that should be.
Wow. That's just, I never even thought about it from that perspective. I mean, like in a movie like The Longest Day, so there they give us, you know, aerial shots of people storming all the beaches at the same time type of thing to give us an idea of the grandeur of it all. But here, yeah, I mean, you're right. I never even thought about the fact that you can't see what's happening in the background, you know, from, right. You know, or I guess you could sort of say to the right of all the action, you know, from our perspective. But what's really cool is, I mean, when you mentioned 12 seconds, so I paused it there, and you can actually even see a medic that's taking care of one of the guys, you know, in that second. I never noticed it before, you know, because I just didn't stop it from there.
You could probably stop every 10th of a second, because this, the shaky cam, we call it that, but it's really like handheld, is moving around so much, and all of these extras, and I know they used a lot of these members of the Irish Army reservists, because they needed people who could follow precision and listen to orders, and there was a sense of already that has been built into them. They didn't have to train a bunch of extras on how to move like a military unit. But even still, it's back to one, do it again, back to one, do it again. But I'm just trying to imagine, and more than likely, I know Spielberg probably had a big hand in it, but you usually have what's called a second unit director, and they're the ones that are trying to organize like the non-A-list actors. They're the ones saying, okay, background, here's what we're going to have you do, and the director may tweak it, but they usually have a second unit director who takes care of a lot of that. But there's a lot of action. There's a lot of actor things going on, or busy things, that if you don't pause it, it just gets lost. But there's so much happening, and every one of these guys is doing something, all while advancing on the beach.
Yeah.
And it adds to the sense of that you're there. I use the term, it's got this what did I call it yesterday? It's very the veracity of it. It's like you're right there, and you never see anything that pulls you out of it.
Right. Because they don't want us to be pulled out of it. They want us to be engulfed in everything that's going on here. You know,
and granted, I know every filmmaker is like, well, of course I don't want you. But there's just some of this, and maybe that's why Spielberg is so good, because he understands how to compose the shot. And even though he's moving it around, he understands the canvas is still the actors. It's still the backdrop. It's still the set. And he knows how to capture what we need to keep us in the movie.
Yeah, for sure. And as these guys start advancing up the beach, the shot basically changes. And once again, we get, you know, from the German perspective, the faceless, nameless German machine gun that is just unloads straight into a crowd of soldiers that are getting off the Higgins, one of the Higgins boats, you know, again, just showing the brutality of this all.
It does make me wonder, because this is so similar to that first shot when the doors, the front of the bow of the Higgins drops to allow them to start storming the beach, and that very first we see them just mowed down. It feels like this is the long shot version of the close up that we got, because no one's getting out of this one. No. I mean, everyone's dropping.
Yeah. I mean, my assumption is that it's a different shot, but you never know.
Oh, it's definitely a different take. Here's a beautiful thing. When you start editing, you may have shot all those extras who knew how to fall up close, and they're like, okay, now we're going to do the far shot, do the same thing all over again. It doesn't matter that it happens 2 minutes or 5 minutes apart in the movie, because there's so much carnage. There's so many boats. We saw so many landing craft. This could be just a reminder how many boats were just completely chewed up before a person could even get off.
Right. It's true. But again, it shows the helplessness of these guys that are storming this beach.
You keep thinking, that's the other thing that I think we didn't talk about it at the time, but when you look at this shot, you're probably thinking, I'm safe in the boat because you haven't been fired upon yet. And then the second that door drops, you realize, I want to be anywhere else but this boat.
That's right.
The safety I thought I had was the illusion. I would rather be on the beach zigzagging and trying to dodge the bullets than to be stuck where I can't move and I'm just literally a fish in a barrel.
Correct. And yeah, again, it makes sense. And then they show us Miller again as he's trying to still get out of the water. And he actually then falls down into the water. You know, he looks a little disoriented as he's moving forward. I mean, we hear more explosions around him and stuff like that, but we don't know if they're specifically affecting him yet or not. But what we do see is all the chaos going on around him that he knows, and he somehow just trips and falls into the water, and they get the coloring of the water in a very scary way, because you see this red hue in the water, you know, telling us that there's so much blood that is already flowing into the water that you can already see. You know, again, how long has this invasion been going on? Just for 2-3 minutes already, but you can see that there's so much blood that it's already able to start changing the color of the water in certain in certain places. You know, unbelievable. Again, there's no question about the fact that they paid so much attention to the details here.
And I think what helps Tom Hanks in the performance here is he is waterlogged and he is wearing all that gear and he is still in waist to maybe knee high water when the explosion behind him, the concussion, makes him fall forward.
Right.
Because there's a concussion behind him that makes him fall forward.
Yeah. Yeah. And then we see him start to maybe get up a little bit, and then the shot changes and they show us an explosion happening. And we see a soldier basically just blown to bits. And you can see that he clearly just lost his leg. One of the things that I've always admired about the way that they made this movie is that they fully utilized amputees, in many of the stunts here, in order to make it even more realistic. So that they don't have to then use special effects to show someone without a leg and stuff like that. You know,
choosing the practical effects of makeup and gore effects, actual literal gore makeup, rather than putting a blue sock and digitally painting in.
Correct. Like, exactly. Even though they had the technology to do that then. Yeah. You know. And then you see like another guy roll over, apparently having been shot or whatever it is, trying to get out of there. And you see his gun, the guy's gun, like right next to him. You know, he's basically abandoned his gun. And then the camera zooms in slowly, and we see that Miller is finally leaving the water, and he's still staggering a little bit. You know, he's trying to get past the Chech hedgehogs, and I love the fact that they have it that he's basically carrying his helmet. You know, he's using that to sort of prop him up also as he's trying to get up. You know, to steady him as he's going. Even and anyone who who knows enough about combat knows that you really should be wearing your helmet.
Right.
There's very little excuse not to have a helmet on for the very aspect of something like this happening. Yeah. Not that a helmet will always be able to save your life, but there's more of a possibility.
No, I'd rather keep it on. What I did like is the concussion that puts him into the water, and now we catch up, and it's the camera's not necessarily zooming in; it's actually literally walking in because we're moving toward, so we're coming together. Okay. You get the sense that because he grabbed his helmet when he went in the water. You get the sense that the water may have pulled it off, but he knew to keep hold of it. And we don't understand why he hasn't put it on yet until as we get closer. And then the sound design sells what's happening, that he is kind of in a bit of a shell shock, that his hearing is muted. Everything becomes muted. He's aware situationally, but it's almost like he's suffering from almost like an immediate concussion.
Right.
Like this is his brain is concussed and he doesn't know how to hear and process right now because he's in a
fight. And the distortion that they do here is just great because it once again makes us feel that we're going through what he's going through.
It's perfect. And what I like is they slow the shots down. They almost, it's not slow-mo, but it's slower than normal time. You get the sense that he's kind of in this fuzzy, almost like he can't believe he's in the real world. Like it's a dreamlike, but it's a horror. It's a nightmare, but it's moving not in real time. It's just a little slower than normal.
Yeah. And I mean, as he starts moving forward, he finally gets out of the water and he trips again. You know, and he was, you know, again, showing the way that he has been disoriented by everything that's going on around him right now. And then he tries to prop himself up and grabs onto one of the hedgehogs, hoping to stay safe a little bit. And then I love how at this point they give us his perspective of the men that are storming the beach. And you see, you know, as we talked about, you see the different reactions or the different ways that some of these men are acting. So the first thing we see is a guy who is cowering behind one of these hedgehogs, and the guy looks like he's about to cry, and he's trying to make himself the smallest target possible by like pulling his legs up in front of him. We see his guns on the ground. You know, he has no use in that gun at anything, and he just doesn't want to be there. You know, he wants to get out of there as much as possible. And then we see two guys, move up close to him on his right-hand side, the left-hand side of the screen. And one of them actually tries to get behind this hedgehog and like push him out of the way. And they have like this mini fight between them, you know, as to, who's supposed to, or who's more deserving of being hidden and saved by this hedgehog. And again, it shows, you know, that, when you're under fire like this, people will act in ways that they never expected that they would act.
It's so hard to predict until you've done it, until you've been there. And then, you know, instinct takes over. And if your instinct is to cower and hide, the whole fight or flight, that's why you train and you train and you train, because you want them to be able to fight. But man, it's one thing when you know it's a simulation, when it's a drill, and when it's real. And some people, that flight or the cower and self-preservation kicks in, and their training goes out the window.
That's right.
Unless somebody can motivate them or reorient them. Sometimes it takes an outside force that can recenter them, because that does happen as well. People who are all crazed and they're disorganized, sometimes all it takes is a commanding voice or somebody that everybody looks up to or somebody that everybody knows, and they can rally them back. They can get their focus on the mission. But that's where true leadership shows up, because that leader doesn't have to necessarily be a captain or anybody of rank. It's whoever you can suddenly feel like, okay, this person's going to keep me safe. Or even if it's fiction, even if you're saying to yourself, you will, it's amazing how the human brain works. You will latch on to any hope. And if this person seems to be in command or in control, and you suddenly feel like they'll get you through this. You'll listen to them because you're in such desperation.
Yeah, for sure. Again, people are, it's as if you're like in the dark and you're looking for someone to lead you out, that type of thing. And you hear a voice and you decide that you're going to follow that voice in order to, get the safety and stuff like that. But again, I love the way that Spielberg doesn't shy away from showing people that didn't act as heroic as one might expect that you should, or that you would. It's great because it's not trying to say something bad about this particular character. He's saying this is part of the reality of what happens in a place like this. There will be those who are overtaken by their fear. We see it just for a few seconds, but it tells us so much just by the way that they do that.
And part of the audience, and I know even I feel this way, I would want to think I'd storm the beach, but then you've got gunfire, you've got the bullet, sand puffs happening with gunfire literally inches from this person. And you understand they're just trying to stay out of bullet fire right now. They're literally being fired upon. It's not like they're hiding from the fight because the fight's over there. The fight is literally happening in their like inches That's from right. them. Like they're an inch away from death and they know that. And so you sympathize. It's not a coward. It's, oh my God, you're being fired on. What else are you going to do? What can you do? And that's that feeling of desperation as well conveys underneath. Like I still think of this all the time when I watch this movie. How did anyone make it up the beach?
That's right.
How did that happen? And I think that sense of, I don't know. I mean, part of it is the greatest generation or the silent generation or whatever, but it's part of that. You just do, no matter what the odds, you just do it. And it's an interesting commentary because I run into taking a side John here into what's going on today. So many of the quote Gen Zers, the generation that would be called upon if there was a world war to be in these situations, they can't handle a bad report at work or a bad appraisal, or, they don't have the mental, I don't want to say the mental, but they've had things so easy for so long that just the slightest thing brings them crushing down. Imagine being put in this situation.
Yeah. Sure.
And I'm thinking about like my own kids. I'm not trying to throw anybody else under the bus. My own kids could not do what this is being portrayed on the beach, that these young men were called upon. Hey, your job, get up the beach, take the beach. And you're just thinking, it's a beach. Let them have it. I'm going back home, but they have no choice. And they just do. Right. What I like is even while Tom Hanks is having his, and we're getting, he's looking at one, looking at another, the action behind him, there are still people. You get the sense it's wave after wave of people just throwing bodies at this beach. And that's all they could do. That was the military strategy of this fight. Throw more bodies than they can shoot and take the beach.
Now,
and it's just blows my mind.
No, for sure. Now, I just wanted to go back to what you were talking about with the idea of Gen Zs and things like that, and millennials dealing with stuff like this, because not to get political or anything like that, but as we've seen here in my country over the last year with the war that we've been dealing with, that I've heard so many times. That the way that all these millennials and Gen Zers have stepped up and shown that when you are put in this type of situation, instinct will take over. And, whatever.
Well, I would argue this, and you're right. I don't want to paint with a broad brush.
No, I would have. Let's put it this way. Don't get me wrong. My first impression, also having kids of that age is, you're right. Those are the ones that are going to say, keep the beach. That's it. But again, when you get to the money time, you see that it's possible that they're, if they have something that they feel that they need to fight for, they're going to act differently.
And that's what I want to say. I don't want to paint with such a broad brush, but I do think, and it's, I don't want to say it's encouraging that it takes this to do that, but what's happening in your country is, so you're being physically attacked. It's not something that we're hearing about in the news. You and the people who live in Israel, they sense it. They see it. They hear it. So it's much more real. And when it becomes real, then I think it does solidify people because they start realizing, hey, there is adversity, but we can either overcome it or we could succumb to it. It's survival now. We'd rather overcome. Right. I think in our country, we're so isolated. You got people over here who are just, they're not capable of understanding what that's like. I think if we were, and God, I'm not saying I want that. I would like to believe if we were, there'd be enough people saying, whoa, okay, it's real now. All this nonsense we argue about, it means nothing anymore if we don't have a country.
Okay, understandable. So back to Saving Private Ryan.
Yes.
So again, Miller is there, and you're right. I was going to point out also the fact that as Miller is trying to prop himself up, you know, we see that there are guys still behind him that are moving forward and stuff like that. And it's great. You know, that there's this movie is a prime example of the fact that there is always something going on in the background. You know, so that if you pay attention enough, you will see something happening behind the characters as they are moving forward, literally in this particular case. And then he looks in a different direction and he sees three men running in front of him. And one of them has a flamethrower on his back. Mm-hmm. And then we see that the flamethrower, the backpack basically just explode, engulf this first guy in flames. And then the two guys that are right behind him are also then engulfed by the secondary explosion of the whole thing. Which again shows the scariness of this type of thing. So now I know you've been waiting a few days for me to you know, throw something at you that you weren't expecting. But what do you know about a flamethrower?
What do I know about it? It's a device that uses two different tanks. One is the generally natural gas or something, so that way you've got a flame and then you've got under pressure a liquefied material, generally like a gel or a flammable liquid that can then be pushed through under pressure, that when it hits the gas flame, ignites it as it throws that flame to a destination.
Correct. Okay, so a military flamethrower uses liquid fuel, either heated oil or diesel, that is, connected to that is shot out. It's a controllable jet of fire, basically.
Mm-hmm.
So when do you think they started using flamethrowers in battle? And we're not talking about lighting your arrows on fire and shooting at Henry V. You know,
I've got to imagine World War I. It can't be any. It wasn't the Civil War, I can tell you that.
Okay, so you're correct. They started using it during World War I, during trench warfare, but the use was greatly increased during World War II. So you can have these flamethrowers mounted on vehicles, sometimes maybe a tank or something like that, or like we just saw here, someone has it as a backpack. Basically, you have a backpack and the gun. And it has either two or three cylinders in the background with compressed propellant gas, usually nitrogen. And the other one has a flammable liquid that is then used to ignite the whole thing and at the gun nozzle. And, it can really blow things up. It can burn things up, with the bunkers, other fortifications, things like that. They would use them in small spaces to take out bunkers and pillboxes, which we'll see in a few weeks, that they should give us an example of that, how that happens here. So what do you think are some of the disadvantages of carrying a flamethrower?
We just saw the main disadvantage.
Okay, I'll get to that in a second. That is, first of all, not correct, but we'll keep going. So the main
getting blown up is not correct.
The main disadvantage is the weapon's weight and length, because it impairs soldiers' mobility. And it's also limited to only a few seconds of burn time, because it uses the fuel very quickly. So therefore the.
Yeah. I got to imagine it's not like the thing with John Carpenter where it feels like you can just burn the whole camp down with the flamethrower.
That's right. Another disadvantage is the fact that it is very visible on the battlefield, which makes it that they become more of a target for marksmen, snipers, and stuff like that to try to take them out.
Yeah, and I gotta imagine you learned very quickly. You'd rather take the guy out before you guys get burned alive in whatever. Whether you're in a tank and you push it up against the little eye hole or anything like the pillboxes we'll see later, that's the last thing you want is to be burned alive.
Now they also claim that flamethrower operators were rarely taken prisoner. They would usually just execute them, maybe because they thought that it's someone who's being who's brutal. I mean, it doesn't explain here why. It's an interesting way to look at it. Trying to figure out, okay, why would they, why would they say that these are the guys that they're not gonna, take prisoner? So I don't know. The effective range is shorter than other battlefield weapons. So therefore, you have to get much closer to your target in order to take care of it, to set something on fire and stuff like that. Okay, so here's the thing that you talked about, which is what they show here. So this article says the risk of a flamethrower operator being caught in an explosion of their weapon due to enemy hits on the tanks is exaggerated in films. In some cases, the pressure tanks have exploded and killed the operator when hit by bullets or grenade shrapnel. But it wasn't something that happened as often as they show in movies. In movies, it's just for the pyrotechnics, I guess, that they show that these type of things happen. The pressurizer is filled with non-flammable gas that is under high pressure. So if the tank itself ruptures, it will knock the operator forward, like maybe an aerosol can would do and stuff like that. So when pierced by a bullet, a metal can if it's filled with diesel or napalm will basically just leak instead of exploding and stuff like that. But again, in movies, they like to show how devastating these type of things can be.
It's very effective visually, but now that you say that, it makes a lot of sense. If you hit the fuel tank, the gasoline is just going to spurt out. And if you hit the nitrogen, that's not flammable. It would. So, correct. Yeah, you're right.
I mean, it reminds me of the scene in The Running Man, where Schwarzenegger basically just disconnects it and lets the gas, Fireball was trying to kill him. He was trying to kill Richards. And he basically disconnects the... I guess the cord, from the flamethrower, and therefore the gas at that point starts leaking, and then he throws a grenade and it blows up because of that.
Mm-hmm.
I thought it would be interesting to talk about flamethrowers.
Now, I can tell you something interesting, because I have looked up something before, but it has nothing to do with this movie and has nothing to do with it. It just popped in my head. Have you seen videos of the Terminator?
Not that I can recall.
Okay, so have you seen what the robot dogs look like that they're using for guard duty and things? If you look up Terminator, there is a company in the United States that sells a robot dog with a flamethrower on its back. And I looked it up. I'm like, are we allowed to literally buy this product? Or is this just something somebody created? Is this like you literally can buy a robot dog today, right now, with a flamethrower on its back. You don't need a license. There is no licensing of flamethrowers because they've been taken out of the military for so long. No one's thought about it. Now, all it's going to take is somebody getting killed at the hands of some knucklehead who buys one of these. But you can literally go online. I think they run for about $10,000. You can buy a robot guard dog with a flamethrower on its back. It's called the Therminator.
Okay. Let me know how that goes.
you need when you get a chance, you always tell me about watching movies. You need to go watch some promotional videos from this company. And you're like, why would you need that? but people are buying them.
Yeah. It's the way those things work. Right. So again, Miller is still disoriented. And I love, again, the detail that they show that there is blood dripping out of his ear. You can see that his left ear has blood trickling down from it, which means that, the explosion was close and, at least partially damaged his eardrum at the time, and therefore something is bleeding. So you can see that at second 56, if you're interested in trying to find a specific spot that shows it. But he's completely disoriented, and then he basically gets splashed by what looks like water. And then as it's dripping down on him, it's all red. So you basically get the impression, because there was just an explosion that happens around there, that basically he's being rained down upon by both blood and possibly water, depending on where the character was who just got blown up.
It's a powerful thing to think about that much. Like, it's a combination of blood. It's like it's bloody water. It's right. Bloody water being spilled all over you. Talk about symbolism. You just had fire, and now you've got a baptism by water, but right. It's bloody water.
Exactly. And that's the way this minute ends. So, Alan, did you have anything else you want to say about this minute?
No, I think we covered it as we went.
All right. Excellent. So every Thursday, we have a segment called Say What? Say What Thursday?
Okay. I am not prepared for this.
You don't need to. This is a game. Say that,
but I know you. I am not prepared.
So, I mean, last week we talked a little bit about how this game is going to work, and I've tweaked it slightly over the last week, because last week I said that I'm going to use the same three actors throughout the entire season, and now I decided I'm going to mix and match. So every week I'm going to give my guests three choices. Okay, so what's the idea here? The idea here is I'm going to give you a movie quote from a character, all right? And I will tell you that it's possibly one of three actors from this movie, and you have to try and guess what movie the quote is from. I will tell you the quote, and I will tell you the year that the movie came out. There are lifelines. You can ask for, the director. You can ask for other... actors, things like that.
Okay.
I will not give you other lines from that character in that movie, because that would really defeat the purpose. But again,
I feel like I'm being set up.
The idea is to have fun.
All right, we'll have fun.
Okay, so this week, the three actors that are the possibility of the answers being, you have either Tom Hanks, Matt Damon, or Dennis Farina.
Dennis. Okay. Get Shorty. I'm gonna say Get Shorty. I don't know.
All right. So we will start with the first one, a movie from 1988, and the quote is, okay. "Is this moron number one? Put moron number two on the phone."
Ooh. God, that sounds so familiar. A De Niro flick? Is it a De Niro? Can I say that? Can I ask a question? Is it De Niro?
Yes. Well, it's not De Niro who makes the comment.
No, it's not. That'd be Midnight Run. Midnight Run.
Yes, it would be. Okay. And who is the actor who plays who says this line?
It's Dennis Farina.
Yes, it is.
It's got to be. It sounds like him. I heard him in my head. I heard his same.
Jimmy Serrano.
The same guy in every movie.
That's
like
right.
The same somewhat pseudo gangster.
That's right. Jimmy Serrano. And he goes, "Is this moron number one? Put moron number two on the phone." Yes.
It's funny. Great. I watched that movie a couple of years ago because I hadn't seen it since I was probably 1989, after it was out in the Blockbuster rentals, that I saw that movie. I did not see it in the theater.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
All right.
Ready for the next one?
Okay. I think.
Okay, this is one from 2015. It's a little
Okay.
long, but I'm still gonna read the whole quote for you. I've got to make a lot more water. The good thing is I know the recipe. You take hydrogen, you add oxygen, and you burn. Now I have hundreds of liters of unused hydrazide at the MDV. If I run the hydrazide over to the iridium catalyst, it'll separate into N2 and H2. And then if I just direct the hydrogen into the small area and burn it, luckily, in the history of humanity, nothing bad has ever happened from lighting hydrogen on fire.
That was actually a pretty darn good flick. I'd never read the book, but that was The Martian.
Okay, and who is the actor?
Matt Damon.
There you go. Very good. I've actually read the book, and I think the book is amazing. If you get some time again, I keep recommending things to you, and I know you don't have time. So, but
Hey, I watched the movie.
that's true. I love the movie. It's a great movie.
That was so well done. That's almost like Castaway, but in space.
Yeah, I just watched Castaway yesterday. Wow. Okay. Or was it today? No, I watched it yesterday. I don't remember. No, it was
Doesn't
yesterday, yesterday, yesterday. That's right.
you
Okay.
watch a lot of movies? You rewatch a
Hello.
lot of movies too.
What's my name?
Movie Rob.
There you go. All right. Next one. From 1999.
Okay. Yeah.
Okay. You're about 10 seconds away from spending the rest of your life in the padded room.
We're about 10 seconds away from spending the rest of your life in a padded room.
Yes.
I have no memory of this quote. Hold on. You are about 10 seconds away. Yeah, I don't think I've. All right, I'm gonna need a hint.
Okay, the hint is that Sam Rockwell is in this movie.
Ooh. Rockwell, was it Charlie's? One of the Charlie's Angels, 10 seconds away from.
1999.
Hey,
I'll give you
1990.
I'll even expand on that hint. This
Okay.
line is said to his character.
Oh, wait a minute. 99. See, now I can't remember when the movie came out. Is it okay? Can I ask a question? Is Robin Williams in the movie? No. God. So it's not Good Will Hunting. Okay, you've stumped me. I don't know. I don't know if I've seen. Maybe I have, but I don't. It's not ringing any bells yet.
Okay, James Cromwell is also in this movie.
One of the Star Trek movies. It's a Star Trek or no?
Bonnie Hunt is also in this movie.
I may have not seen this. You may be describing.
I am sure you've seen this movie. David Morse is also in this movie.
James Cromwell? Man. I may have seen it, but it's not ringing any bells yet. I'm sorry.
Okay.
I feel like I'm letting you down.
Graham Greene is in this movie.
Wait. No, it's not Die Hard 3.
No.
No. I'm like, I don't remember that line.
Well, I don't remember any of these other characters. Graham Greene is the only one that I just mentioned that's in Die Hard 3. Okay, Michael Clarke
Oh, wait.
Duncan is in this movie.
Oh, Jesus Christ. The Green Mile.
Very close.
Oh, it's not.
No, the Jesus Christ part about
Oh.
JC, John Coffey.
But it is the Green Mile.
Yes, it is the Green Mile.
I only saw that movie once. I saw it in the theater and I didn't like it. I mean, I enjoyed the drama behind it and I thought it ended. I mean, it had me emotionally. I was crying at the end, but I was like, I felt it wasn't as good as Shawshank. I wanted it to be Shawshank and it wasn't for some reason. I
Okay.
don't know why that
Okay.
expectation going into it.
All right, but it's a phantasmagoric movie as opposed to Shawshank, which is a straight drama. That's the
And
difference.
I think part of it is, wasn't the Green Mile released in like six little shorts?
Yes.
And they kind of all go together and mm-hmm. try to commit cohesive story may have been what they were trying. I don't know. But my, if you hadn't said, I needed Michael Duncan Clark.
Okay. I love the movie and the book. The one thing I don't like about the book is because it's six sections, even when you read the full novel, it has a recap at the beginning of every one of those sections, which is strange to be, to be dealing with.
Well, two out of three ain't bad. So it says it's me.
Right,
so
well, you got two more to go. Wait, and who's the actor?
Three. Okay.
No, we're doing five. And who is the actor?
Who is the actor who said that?
Yes.
It's got to be Tom Hanks.
Yes, it was.
Okay. It's a process of elimination. I didn't think it would be the other two.
That is correct. Okay. All right. Let's go with another one from 1996. They say the f***ing smog is the f***ing reason you have such beautiful f***ing sunsets.
Oh, I know that line. Oh, that is Get Shorty. That's Get Shorty. That's Dennis Farina.
Wait, that is correct.
He's Ray Bones Barboni. He's Ray Bones.
That's right.
I love Excellent. Get Shorty. I'm going to go watch it. I haven't seen that in like 10, maybe 12 years. I love Get Shorty. That is a great movie. That's a fun, well-written, great movie.
Yes. Yes, it really is. All right. And the final one, again, it's a little long, but it's fine. Okay. So this is from a movie that came out in 1989.
Okay.
These are the simple rules. No barking, no growling. You will not lift your leg to anything in this house. This is not your room. No slobbering, no chewing. You will wear a flea collar. This is not your room. No begging for food. No sniffing of crotches. And you will not drink from my toilet. This is not your room.
Not the car. Not the car. That's Turner and Hooch with Tom Hanks.
Yes. That one I had to put in for you. I know that you love dogs more than people. I love dogs more
than people. You are absolutely right, sir. I say that a lot. Most people who listen to my both radio and regular show, I prefer dogs over most people.
Yeah.
Not the
fault. Okay, so you did a great job there, Alan. You didn't have enough faith in yourself.
Well, 4 out of 5 is a B. It's a low B, but it's a B. I'll take it.
Okay.
It's an 80. I'll do an 80%.
That is fine. All right. So, Alan, would you like to once again tell people where they can find you, especially on Halloween?
Oh, tonight. We do a radio show every Halloween. We've done it for a while now. It's called a Halloween Spooktacular. It's a live radio show. It's 9 p.m. Eastern Daylight Time or New York time because I live in the United States. So it's 9 p.m. Eastern Daylight Time. Will it be? Yeah. And if you don't catch it from 9 to midnight on WBHF radio, you have to do a Google search or find WBHF AM 1450 or FM 100.3. We always release it as a podcast within a couple of days afterwards. So just follow me on The Alan Sanders Show. I will make sure to let everybody know, whether it's on Facebook, X, Instagram, Getter, Truth Social. Just do a search for that and your social media of choice, and we'll make sure to put the link to the show. So if you can't catch it live, you can catch a rebroadcast.
All right. Excellent. Hopefully everyone will find that and look at everything that Alan has done, will be doing tonight. Finding me is very simple. Just do a quick search for Movie Rob Minute. You can find me on Facebook, find me on Instagram, you can find me on Twitter. You can find me on my website, movierobminute.com. And if you want to send me an email, you can send it to movierobminute@movierob.net. So, Alan, you feel like coming back again tomorrow to continue up this beach?
You know, I think I need to be here on All Saints Day. I need it because after all the carnage and then the ghosts, the ghouls, the goblins, I should probably be here to start the month of November with you.
All right. Excellent. So I will be back tomorrow. But... until then, earn this.
My solitude.